Good day. You're listening to European Buddha.
Good morning and welcome to the European Buddha podcast. This is Emilia connecting from rainy, augusty Helsinki. Today, we are looking into the heart of Buddha's teaching, the first of the Four Noble Truths. Buddha taught about suffering and its end. So, Howie Martin, would you like to introduce our guest today?
Thank you, Emilia. Yes, with pleasure. So, welcome, Chan Master Zako Andrijevich. Zako has been practicing and teaching Buddhism around the world for many years and pioneered by the establishment of the first Buddhist community and center in Croatia called Dharma Loka. It is located in Zagreb, where Zako also lives. He received a rare recognition, a transmission of the Dharma from Chan Buddhist master Zengyen, who appointed him as one of his Dharma hearers in the West. He is also a martial artist and promotes interreligious dialogue and is engaged in topics like climate change. So, warm hello and welcome, Zako.
Hello, Emilia and Martin. It's nice to be with you this morning here.
2,500 years ago, this person called the Buddha saw a truth that we are misunderstanding something about our lives. This way is known as Dharma and has been attracting many practitioners over the centuries to follow it. So in our podcast, we want to talk about these teachings, about dukkha, suffering, and this is what we are now calling the Basic Truth Series. So, Zako, was truth something that brought you to Buddhism?
Well, I wouldn't say so. Yes, my first interest was in martial arts and yoga, but I was practicing with a small group of people who were interested much more in deeper meaning of those arts. So we were searching and exploring the philosophy which was behind. And this is how I actually met Buddhism. We had the luck that a teacher who was teaching us martial arts and yoga was from Britain. So he was visiting us once a year, and he was also a Buddhist teacher, so he was teaching us Buddhism as well. And by being exposed to Buddhist teaching in this way, I became very, very much interested in it, and I started to study myself. And at that time, it was very difficult to get any books on Buddhism. There were no internet, there were no Amazon, there were no those possibilities which we have now. So I'm just trying to describe some of the conditions at that time and some difficulties in studying the Dharma and practicing the Dharma. But in the same time, there was a great enthusiasm. That is how I felt, and also the members of my group.
And what was this enthusiasm about? Can you describe that?
Well, we live in a socialist, communist country, on the one hand, in which religion was not something which was appropriate to practice or to follow, you know. It was a very materialistically oriented society. And there was some longing, maybe, for a deeper understanding of who we are, need to understand the life in general, and need to deal more skillfully with the various life situations which we all meet. after we started to study Buddhism, we found that the teaching of Buddhism corresponds perfectly with our need. You know, we were looking for a kind of harmony in ourselves, harmony with others, harmony with the world. That was like a ideal which comes with those discipline of martial arts and yoga as well. So
when we go to the subject of suffering, Buddha taught about suffering at its end. What do you think he meant by suffering, this discontentment in life?
Well, I think there is sometimes a misunderstanding of Buddha's teaching on suffering. The way we translate the Sanskrit term dukkha is maybe sometimes misleading. And I think it's necessary to know the real meaning of the Sanskrit term, and then it's necessary to understand in what way that meaning applies to our experience. Dukkha in Sanskrit does not mean suffering as we normally understand it. Actually, the Sanskrit term dukkha refers to suffering and happiness as we normally understand it. But precisely because this constant change and oscillation between the two, there is this unsatisfactory feeling, there is this insecurity, there is this lack of stability in our life. So it would be wrong to say that our whole life is suffering, and I don't think anybody can really accept such a understanding.
Yeah, and that's where we get the pessimistic idea of this first noble truth.
Yes. And it is far away from that. It's not a pessimistic at all. I would say it's very realistic, really. You know? So suffering in a Buddhist context really means that threat of unsatisfaction going through all our experiences, whether pleasant or unpleasant, whether happy or sad. In the First Noble Truth, the Buddha speaks about suffering precisely because it is something which we all share. That is something which we all recognize in our experience. And that is also something which, if we don't really become fully familiar, and if we don't really understand the suffering as a phenomena, as a experience, we can't really hope to overcome it. We can't really hope to change our life. So for this reason, I think that the Buddha approach was a very, very realistic. You know, he did not offer us bliss, peace, and happiness without making us facing first our reality of our life and what we normally experience.
Was just thinking that the good news is that when the life throws the first dart to us, we don't have to add the second dart of pain with our reactions. That's really the good news.
Oh, certainly. Yeah, sure. And this is what we normally do when we don't understand suffering and how it arises and why it arises. And only if we know that, we can know how it can cease. We don't understand the causes and conditions for arising and ceasing of suffering. So,
As far as I experience it, there is that things can never be ideal. There's always some kind of an idea or an attitude. When this comes, then I will be happy. And when it comes to the meditation practice, I'm noticing it's also my inability to not just be with myself.
It's very much connected what we were just talking about, not having this sense of completeness, not being satisfied with ourselves, not being at ease with ourselves. We are constantly looking for conditions which will somehow bring that feeling to ourselves. Or we are expecting them to happen once the outside conditions comes to our likings, if I can say so. And in that sense, this ideal state or this ideal life is always projecting some future, distant future usually, where we expect these things to happen. So there is this huge gap inside of ourselves, dissatisfaction with what is it right now and here, and hope for happiness, which is always dislocated somehow in the future, if I can use that term, or it is moved somewhere in the future. So we are expecting it to happen. And the bigger that gap is, the bigger dissatisfaction with ourselves, really. That is a kind of continuous conflict which is going on in between what is right now and what we expect things to be. And for that reason, of course, when we sit in meditation, then we have to face ourselves and then we face this gap inside of ourselves, we can also understand why it is there. We can see that this continual projection of imaginary situation in a future is not the right way to establish that kind of harmony and happiness in ourselves. And that is the beginning, actually, of establishing harmony and peace and happiness with ourselves.
And what would you say to somebody who is saying, well, this is just what modern life is about. It's about demands, expectations, and you need to keep up. Sometimes modern life feels to be that way, and sometimes it seems to be, normal.
Well, first of all, what we call modern life is, I would say, a very complex phenomenon, which consisted of sociological, economical, psychological, political, all kind of issues, really. There are a few characteristics which are present there. For example, The speed, the way we live nowadays is much, much faster than the people used to live in the past, and then this fast way of living brings tension and anxiety. We simply don't have the time to give ourselves more deeply to anything, therefore. Superficiality somehow develops. We become very superficial to whatever we deal with, and in the end, it brings kind of alienation. Alienation from ourselves, alienation from other people, alienation from nature in general. Once we live very fast, it is because we want to satisfy our expectations which we have from ourselves, but also expectations others have from ourselves as well. And our inability to do that and we can never satisfy everyone. So our inability to do that gives rise to this tension and anxiety, you know, and then we become, you know, we become simply superficial. There is no enough time to do things properly, and there is this need to do everything. So we don't apply ourselves fully to anything.
Yes, and there seems to be this sickness of the day that we tend to constantly comparise us with others, and there's this feeling of not being enough or not having enough.
Yes, and I think especially, you know, nowadays, you know, young people can, you know, well, they are surrounded by plenty of everything, you know, but they can't have all of this. And there is, I think, huge difference between those who can and those who can't. And that can create also a lot of problem, you know, and they can lose their self-confidence, and they can think of themselves as not worthy, seeing how some people can have everything and they don't, and so on and so on. So, you know, when I think back in my own youth and how things were then, of course, there were differences between people. You know, some people were richer and some poorer. That was always the case. Much more equality was also present at the time among the young people. You know, there were no such a huge differences on the one hand. On the other hand, there were no so many things to have. So many things which are promising our happiness, you know, so we were not deluded by those things, thinking that they can bring us happiness, as it is the case nowadays, you know. But maybe I'm just getting old and not understanding well the young generations.
I think this experience also leads to people to practice, like, when there is this feeling of discontent and the feeling that there is something more to this, it leads you to look inside.
Yeah, like a feeling of, is this all? Is this really all?
Exactly.
And like this sense of what you earlier described as searching for deeper meaning. Like, it's interesting. How is this sensation of deepness coming into play? I think it's an intuition that there's more. And then it's difficult to trust that intuition, to trust yourself also on this.
Yeah. I fully agree with you. I don't think that our outside conditions are defining us completely. It's never the case. Whether there is plenty of things around us, whether we live in rich world and conditions in which we can have everything, or whether we live in a very poor conditions where there is nothing, both of those conditions can provoke that thought you just mentioned, you know, and they start asking ourselves, you know, is this all, or is this how the life is, whether there is something deeper to it or more to it, you know, and anything can really start that spark, so to say, you know, of search and for looking deeply into ourselves and looking for some kind of teaching which could explain things to us and by which we can transform ourselves.
I'm curious to hear how your experience in suffering has changed during the years and the practice, because I can share like my experience that I feel like the suffering has turned, like kind of the humor part has come out. Like, I can really, it's really funny. Like, when something happens, I can kind of sense like, wow, this is happening. And even my thoughts, I can laugh to them. It's not always so easy. Sometimes it is. Sometimes I get stubborn and it's very difficult, but it's amazing to feel things happen and more like observe what's happening. So, I mean, you do martial arts, like has it taught you something?
Oh, yes, sure, absolutely. You know, what martial arts are dealing with is a conflict. What is this conflict all about and where this conflict really starts? You know, and then we come to realize that all of these conflicts are starting in our mind, you know. And the true martial arts are really about overcoming conflict on all three levels, you know, on a physical, verbal, and a mental level as well. And when we come to that field of mental conflicts, we are actually in a field of suffering and how suffering arises and how suffering ceases. So this is like a inner dimension of martial arts, which unfortunately becomes hidden or is hidden for many of those who are practicing martial arts. Actually, the main thing is the more we are able to let go of our attachments to whatever there is, the less we suffer. And that's the truth about it. You know, whenever we have these very, very strong attachment, whether it is a view or whether it is a thing or whether it is a, you know, certain conditions, then as things are changing, and that's inevitable, you know, everything changes, we will experience suffering. And so the less we are touched, the less we suffer, you know. And I think that's very, very important, to understand.
Thank you, Zarko, so much for connecting with us today. And also thank you to our listeners for being with us here and now.